Oh, I love this woman, Britney Spears. Something about ice. Hot as ice. That sounds like a frozen hot chocolate. Welcome back. Weekend Warriors. Love it. Talking about ices today. Here's my favorite song about ice. Yep.
You're as cold as ice.
You're as cold as ice.
You're willing to sacrifice.
Sacrifice. What a good word to rhyme with it. Love it. The temperature.
You never take advice.
Advice. Another good rhyming.
Someday you'll pay the price.
Someday you'll pay the price. This is just one rhyme after another. There used to be a poet named Ogden Nash. My dad was just in love with Ogden Nash. So totally generational. There were no hip-hop or rap stars in those days. But the poets, like Ogden Nash, my dad used to love this one. The pelican, an interesting bird whose bill holds more food than his belly can. The pelican and belly can. Oh, my dad used to think that was so funny. Today I want to talk about ice because of Kobe having ice in his veins. He wanted the ball to last shot because of his preparation and how hard he worked and his belief in himself and his confidence. And so when I thought about that, I thought of Chow Bella, my favorite ices, because it was ice. And I love the world of art. Let me tell you about the Michelangelo exhibit I saw at the Getty that you all need to go to see his drawings. Oh, my God. We'll do that later in the show. But I was fascinated by the world of art. And where do you see ice in the world of art? You see ice in the world of art that comes from 1868, 1869 in France. Was the coldest winter on record. The River Seine never freezes. It froze. And Claude Monet and his buddies, as they're inventing Impressionism, a whole new way to paint paintings, they went to the sea, near to Normandy, where actually World War II started, but this is 100 years beforehand. And it's freezing, and it's snowing, and it's ice. And they went outdoors, it's called painting in plain air, to paint the fresh snow. And they must have said to each other, you think it's just white, you think it's just one color, but it's actually not. The way the light in the morning bounces off the fresh snow and the icicles dripping and freezing and the River Seine, there's nothing but beautiful colors here. It's not just white. So much so that the shadow, a shadow is black. Claude Monet said, no, it's not. If you really look carefully at ice and the shadow on ice and snow, it's actually blue. So there's a painting he made in 1869 called The Magpie. I put it on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, at Dr. Robert Clapper. Or you can look it up, Monet Magpie. To me, it's the greatest painting, one of the greatest paintings I've ever seen. I had it hanging in the operating room, actually, yesterday while I was operating, which really was awesome. I've never operated. They have all these TV screens everywhere, which is supposed to have all kinds of, you know, medical stuff up there. X-rays, CAT scans. I had Claude Monet's painting, The Magpie. And the energy in the room was fantastic. I did a lot of knee replacements yesterday. And it was so enjoyable because I'm looking at Monet's Magpie while I'm operating. I felt like George Costanza who put a bologna sandwich under the pillow while he was having sex. Like, he just wanted all your sensations to be at maximum. I'm operating with Claude Monet's painting hanging on the walls. It was just beautiful. But let's listen to the story of looking at snow and ice due to this severe winter in 1869.
3 months after Camille's death, France experienced its coldest winter in decades, completely freezing the River Seine near Monet's home in Vitoy. In some of the earliest work after his wife's death, Monet wanted to capture the Seine's freezing, but he also wanted to capture it in a different way. One painting wouldn't suffice. He wanted to capture the entire freezing process through the eventual thawing, all from the same perspective. Mm. painting the same subject from the same perspective multiple times is called a series.
Yes, it is.
The purpose of a series is to capture how the changing light affects the color on the subject based on the hour in a day or the season in a year. Painters like Monet realized that a single change in light across the landscape would entirely change the colorization and thus the entire composition. Monet would go on to create more series later in his career, such as his famous Haystack series and Ruined Cathedral series. But his first was the Freezing of the Seine, known as his Debacle series.
I just love that. He's painting the same scene, but depending on whether he paints it in the morning, afternoon, or at night, the colors are different. And when you look at the Haystack series, he paints it during the different seasons, the spring, the winter, the summer, the fall. Same scene, but look how different it is. This guy was just next-level genius.
He went on to capture 18 separate scenes of this freezing, but I want to focus on three, which I will refer to as the before, the frozen, and the thaw. Now again, these are not detailed images. With Impressionism, the painter is tasked with achieving an impression of the subject. Monet would use fast brushstrokes in order to quickly capture these fleeting moments of light. He had to work quickly, otherwise he would have to stop and come back the next day in order to find the proper light again. Because of this, images are reduced to shapes.
So he's painting the river liquid, the river frozen, and then the river thawing back again.
Try to forget what objects you have before you. A tree, a house, a field, or whatever. Merely think, here is a little square of blue. Here an oblong of pink. Here a streak of yellow. And paint it just as it looks to you, the exact color and shape, until it gives you your own impression of the scene before you. Blocks of ice then become rectangles. Mm. Trees and people become lines. Buildings become squares and triangles.
Same thing in sculpting. You know, your cheekbones are like an egg shape. You know, your nose is like a cylinder. Your head is like a cube. These are basic geometric shapes, and then you modify. There's only a certain number of shapes as a surgeon that make up your body. Hemisphere, sphere, ball and socket joint. I'm constantly removing bone spurs and shaping the bone to be smooth again, to be rounded. Things, when degeneration occurs of arthritis, things square off. The joint is no longer curved. It's box-like. The goal of my surgeries and shoulder replacements, knee replacements, hip replacements, is to return the male-female convex and concave curvature. It's all about the shapes.
Monet's brush techniques were developed to convey shape. He used brick strokes, particularly in the water, to show reflections, and then used caches, which are little comma-like strokes, to show the shape of trees and flowers or ripples in water. As opposed to empty landscapes, Monet frequently included landmarks and people in his paintings, which helped fix that painting in time and place. It ensured that he was indeed capturing a specific moment in time. Monet was known for horizontal landscapes and vertical subjects.
Horizontal landscape, vertical subject. Wow, it's just beautiful. There's a 90-degree difference between a tree and the horizon line.
In these paintings, the River Seine is painted in short, horizontal brushstrokes across the canvas, while the people, trees, and buildings are painted with vertical brushstrokes. Another technique Monet utilized was broken color. Instead of blending color on his palette, he would often take colors directly from the tube and layer them onto the painting. This allowed the audience to blend these colors together optically.
Here's the curator from the Musée d'Orsay in Paris, which has a beautiful collection of Monet and Impressionist paintings. And the most popular painting at the museum is the one I'm talking about, the magpie that he painted in 1869, right after his wife's death and when this freezing cold winters took place.
One of the earliest paintings we have in the exhibition is a very large winter landscape. It's an important painting, I think, because it's embodied in the way they were looking at nature. Here, especially because Monet is really trying to see what are the colors of snow.
The colors of snow. It's white! No, it's not. It's not white. That's the revolution. It's colored.
But in his eyes, you see all the reflections of light. So you have reflections of yellow, of pink, and especially the shadows. The shadows are not black anymore. They are now colored with lots of blue, very vivid blue. It was one of the ideas people of the 19th century had, and especially the scientists, that the colors of one shadow was the opposite colors of the light.
The shadow is blue. Check out the magpie by Monet, and you'll see for the first time in your life, you're going to see a shadow that's not black, it's blue. Fascinating. The colors of ice, the complexity of ice, just like making mango sorbet versus chocolate sorbet. Those guys at Ciao Bella, they got it right. What about in sports? The complexity of ice. What's it like texture-wise? There's slush, there's water, and then there's the solid ice. How does that texture? That's what makes it delicious to have the perfect chocolate sorbet, not these other companies that say they're making chocolate. It's terrible. These guys have made the best because they understand texture. Because if you don't do texture right with ice, you'll get a crack in it. And if you get a crack in it, it ruins everything. And in the 1980 Summer Olympics, the greatest ice in sports in my lifetime was not the hockey team beating the Russians, although it was the same Olympics. For me, it was watching speed skater Eric Heiden win 5 gold medals in a row. But he almost didn't because of the 4th race, the 1500 meter. This race, because there was a crack in the ice, the texture of the ice was not perfect. He almost fell, but he caught himself because it was early in the race. Listen to Eric Heiden talking about the 1500 meter in the 1980 Olympics, the greatest speed skater of all time.
So the 4th race was 1500 meters, and at, I'm going to say, 600 meters, I had a big slip. There was a crack in the ice. It took away a little bit of my rhythm, but it was like one complete stroke was used to sort of maintain my balance, and then all of a sudden I was back skating again. It was early on in the race, and so I still had a lot of strength so I could catch my balance. 1500 meters was a race I really felt confident I was going to walk away with a gold medal, and so a little slip was nothing.
Talk about strength. You know, when you go to the LA Coliseum, those two torsos, the male and female figures, forgot the name of the artist who sculpted them, but I think the male figure is the body of Eric Heiden. He has the most beautiful physique ever. And I think the artist copied Eric Heiden's physique for that sculpture. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. Who called the race in the 1980 Lake Placid Winter Olympics where we saw Eric Heiden do something most special on ice in sports? Keith Jackson. Listen to Keith Jackson calling the 1500 meter race where Eric Heiden slips because of the crack in the ice.
We just hoped that there wasn't going to be some unfortunate accident.
In the 1500 meters, Eric broke into an early lead. Then, with the race in hand, he almost lost it.
I just remember my heart stopping on the backstretch because he went down, he put his hand on the ice, and literally thought that was it.
Coming down off the final turn, slipped there a moment ago. This time he handled it very well. Here's the 5, watch the time.
Eric Heiden, trying for 5, easily won his 4th gold medal.
The greatest understanding of ice, in my opinion, in sports, was in the head of speed skater Eric Heiden.
This guy won everything from the 500 meters to the 10,000 meters. That's like saying somebody's going to go to the Olympic Games and win the 100-meter dash and the marathon.
Eric Heiden going for his 5th individual gold medal.
For a skater, it was like watching a dream because it's just, it'll never be done again.
Way, way out in front of the Austrian.
Eric Heiden's performance was probably the greatest individual performance in history.
Here's Keith Jackson talking about it.
Eric Heiden won 5 individual gold medals. No person has ever dominated their sport at the Olympic level in that manner.
Everybody seemed to think before they started that Eric Heiden was going to win a lot of medals. They weren't sure he would win all 5, but they knew he would be close.
Heiden was going to be the star of the Olympics. And he was the most hyped athlete, not only from the United States, but probably around the world.
Eric Heiden, like Kobe Bryant, who had ice in his veins, Eric Heiden skated on that ice and thrived on the pressure, just like Kobe.
Heiden's first race was against America's 30-year nemesis.
The commies, the state professionals, the Russians.
Kulikov was a great pair for Eric because he was the current world record holder. The 500 meter, that's a race of reaction.
And we've got a good start.
Haydn was terrific under pressure. He was able to look inside himself and dig deep for the strength that he had. Sometimes the pressure made him skate even better. He wasn't afraid of it. It was a challenge for him.
And the best part is he celebrated because he loved the hockey team. And they did all these great things, the Miracle on Ice. They're watching him. You'll hear Mike Arruzione talking about climbing over the wall just to watch Eric Haydn and then run back to the locker room to train for the hockey team. So they win that night. Eric Haydn goes and has a party with them. The problem is the next morning he's got to be a speed skater. And he almost missed the race by oversleeping.
I can remember having a lot of anticipation to go to the game because it was inspirational to see what those young college kids could do. We never expected the U.S. would win that and then have the opportunity to play for the gold medal. And we left that rink on a high and ended up going to bed a little bit late that night. An hour and a half before my race is going to start, I hear a knock on my bedroom door, and it's my coach going, "Where are you?" And it's like, I wake up, and it's like, what happened to my alarm clock? I slept through my alarm.
He almost missed the race.
He skated with a Soviet skater named Viktor Loshkin, and Loshkin went out at a suicidal pace trying to intimidate. And, you know, Haydn caught him about halfway through the race, and Loshkin barely finished.
I went by him, never saw him again. And then in 10,000 meters, usually with about two laps to go, it's like, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Eric Haydn sets a new world record and redefines the word champion.
He's a champion. He inspired Dan Jensen, Bonnie Blair, two of America's best speed skaters. There'll never be anything like Eric Haydn on ice as a speed skater.
Looking back, and as the years pass, I become more appreciative of what I was able to do as an athlete. The ability to skate from the race that's, you know, 35, 38 seconds up to skating a race that's 15 minutes, that's just unheard of.
He was my hero. He was the reason that I stuck with skating and wanted to go to the Olympics.
He really was somebody who was ahead of his time, because to win the shortest event and the longest event in our sport will never be done again.
He understood ice, Eric Haydn. Claude Monet understood ice. The artist painting it, the speed skater skating on it, and then making the most delicious ice chow bella. I love it. Coming up next, I'll take your calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710-ESPN. Oh, this is my favorite song. Mamas and the Papas. All the leaves are brown and the sky is gray. I've been for a walk on a winter's day when there's ice and snow, but not in L.A. I'd be safe and warm if I was in L.A. Love that song. The Great Mamas and Papas. Fabulous. Talking about ice today. Cold as ice. The texture, the color. Fascinating subject. And in surgery, a good buddy of mine, Dr. Earl Bryan, he's an expert in cancer in orthopedics, in the bone. And he'll freeze with liquid nitrogen, kill the tumor so it doesn't spread. Yeah, we use ice in surgery, believe it or not, as a tool. It's fascinating. All right, the number's 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Michael J. Michael, I apologize for making you wait so long on the phone line, but thanks for hanging in there.
Thank you, doctor. I usually have something fun to talk to you about, but I've been in really bad pain for about 2 weeks.
All right, talk to me.
Yeah, and
what do you do for a living?
Sorry, let me get my act together. I clean offices and wash windows.
Okay.
But I'm ambidextrous, so I can use both hands. And I went to sleep one night, and I woke up, and I felt like I slept on my shoulder wrong. That was 2 weeks ago, and now it's been throbbing, like, from my shoulder blades down to my forearm, and I've been alternating ice and heat. And, I mean, there's times where it's just the worst pain I could ever imagine, and I went to two doctors, and the first thing they said is, I can do stem cell, I can do cortisone, and I always refer to you as a friend, because I feel like I've been with you since the start.
Mm-hmm. You are.
So a friend of mine's the Cedars-Sinai head surgeon, blah, 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 and I said, he says, don't let him shoot any stuff in you.
Right.
And I had cortisone about 10 years ago, and man, it was great. I surfed the next day, but I heard you and I listened to you, but I'm at a loss.
Let me teach you a little bit, Michael. First of all, two things cause shoulder pain. One, the troublemaker actually comes from your shoulder, your rotator cuff, your labrum, arthritis. All of those things, and it can biceps tendon. There's many different things that will light up the shoulder as pain. And that pain, because of the way the nerves are, actually is felt. And if you take your right hand and grab the front of your shoulder of your left shoulder, that pain is right there where the deltoid and the pec major, right where your shoulder is, and it radiates into the arm. That is classic of where pain goes when it emanates and starts with what's going on inside your shoulder. It's in the front there, and it radiates into the mid portion of your arm. But I'm going to tell you, Michael, if any of your pain goes below the elbow, into your forearm, into your wrist, into your hand, and any of the pain goes up into the shoulder blade, it ain't coming from your shoulder. Now, it's true. How young are you?
I'm 60.
So at 60, you have what Cedars, we call it, altacocceritis. You're not 30 years old. You're 60. This is, the Romans only lived to be 35 years old. There are diseases that we get, and it's wrong to call it a disease, but we get old. We get arthritis. The elasticity of the tendons, the muscles, the skin breaks down. So yeah, if you get an MRI of your shoulder, it's going to show degeneration in your rotator cuff, in the labrum, maybe a little bit of arthritis. Your biceps tendon may be frayed, but you have two problems. You've got a little bit of 60-year-old aging in your shoulder. But what you're describing, shoulder blade, intractable pain, and going into your forearm, I'm here to tell you, Michael J., your next chess move, your next move in terms of what doctor to see and what to do to figure it out is not to evaluate the shoulder so fast, although it'll be appropriate to get an X-ray and MRI of your shoulder. But the next chess move has to be your neck. You've got degeneration in your neck to the disc, aggravating the nerve, and that's why the shoulder blade is hurting and your forearm is on fire. This is a radiculitis, it's called. This is an inflammation around the nerve itself. And here's a clapper vision for you. If a mosquito comes flying in this room and bites my hand, I get a little scratch, I got a mosquito bite, I itch, you know, and whatnot. No big deal. If that same mosquito bites my wife, her whole hand blows up because she reacts in a super inflammatory way, which I believe is not a bad thing because it may be what fights cancer, but she has this huge inflammatory response to the same mosquito bite. That's what inflammation is. It just lights up the redness, the swelling. Your neck at 60, trust me, you don't have beautiful discs. You don't have beautiful nerves in your neck. You lived a long life. You've got degeneration in your neck, just like I do. But what's going on now that's making your life miserable is the inflammatory response. Now, you want to take Advil? You want to do all? Yeah, in the short term, you do pain stuff, anti-inflammatory stuff. But I hate this stuff. You know why? Because that does not solve the problem. You have to ask yourself, why in God's green earth is my nerve, my disc, all inflamed right now? That's the question. So what you got to do is address the stress on the nerve, not only as it exits the spinal cord in your neck, but on the other end where the nerve embeds itself into the very muscles that are in your arm, in your shoulder blade, and all those other ones. How do you quiet that down? Long-term, swimming's the answer. Short-term, TheraBands. doing exercises to actually strengthen the muscles between your scapula, your shoulder blades, and those muscles are called the rhomboids, because the rhomboid muscle literally looks like a geometric shape called a rhomboid, so they called it that. Just like the deltoid muscle looks like the delta sign in the Greek language. There's nothing high science behind this. This is just what the muscles look like. But how do you strengthen those muscles that attach the two shoulder blades in the middle of your spine? If you take a circular TheraBand and thumbs up, and you go through it like you're being handcuffed, and you pull the TheraBand and try to widen the circle of the TheraBand, you will be strengthening the rhomboid muscles. And this is something, Michael, that a good physical therapist can teach you. I'm not interested in you having an epidural. I'm not interested in you having spine surgery, but whether it's a fusion or a disc replacement. You know, that's something you can put on the back burner. But I love being holistic. Don't just make the pain go away. Get to the root of the problem. You need to meet with a good physical therapist. But before you do, in this stupid broken system that we have for medicine in America, that right away they're going to say, nope, he can't have an x-ray, he can't have an MRI, just go right to therapy. No, you need a diagnosis. I have no idea what's going on in your neck. You need an x-ray, you need an MRI, then you can go for physical therapy. So on Monday, or if you're this miserable, go to the ER today, whatever it is. But you need to be in the hands of someone who knows necks. They need to investigate you. At Cedars, there's Lionel Hunt, there's Terrence Kim, there's Hyen Bay, there's Robert Pashman, Pat Johnson. There are terrific spine folks at Cedars that I'm just rattling off the top of my head. Go see one of these guys. They need to see what's up with your neck. But even if they suggest surgery, you're going to hear my words in your head, not so fast. I'm going to want to try therapy first, and that's how I would handle it. Okay, Michael?
Yeah, you know what? I've tried all the pain.
I don't want pain management. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in finding a diagnosis and then trying to go after strengthening the muscles that need to be tuned up. That's what needs to be done. In the meantime, while you're suffering, you can take an anti-inflammatory, but until... that's not the long-term solution, because then you just treat... then I'm just giving you Robitussin to stop your cough. You need antibiotics to stop coughing when you got pneumonia. You know what I mean? You don't want to just treat the symptom.
Yeah, it's not working. No matter what I take, it's still... I find when I'm working, I feel a lot better. It's when I get home and
right.
sit around.
Correct. Correct.
It goes on fire.
Go get it investigated. I need you to look into your neck before you look into your shoulder. You can look into the shoulder later, but take care of that neck. And thanks so much for hanging on the line. And Michael, I want you to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Okay, thank you.
All right, God bless. All right, we'll take a break, pay some bills. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors show here on 710-ESPN. Ipanema goes walking, and don't she wears, and don't she passes, goes, do you know where the girl from Ipanema is walking? She's walking to a pizza place. And in New York, that's what we do. We walk. We walk. Every corner's got a pizza place. And I miss that. So this week, I decided to take a detour on my way home to have dinner. Don't tell my wife. But I missed the walk for pizza. I parked my car. My mouth is watering already. I parked my car and I walked on the sidewalk in Westwood. And I walked to La Monica's. Been eating pizza there for a million years. He makes the dough in New York. And I love Village Pizza. But I went to La Monica's. It's closer on my way home. Walked in. Yeah, there's lots of slices already there. Don't eat them. In the South Bay, in Hermosa Beach, there's pizza places too. You can see all the slices there. Don't eat them. I'm not interested in eating a slice of pizza that's been sitting out forever. No! I quietly, politely said, what's the next pie that's coming out? It's a pepperoni, thin crust pizza. Perfect. I will wait because I want to eat that pizza. Fresh out of the oven with an ice cold Coke standing up. I don't want to sit down. I'm not a gastroenterologist, but let me tell you something. When you eat a slice of pizza and you bend the crust so that this is teeny tiny, it's like, remember when you used to fold paper to make an airplane that you could fly around the room? How you take the rectangular piece of paper, you fold it in half, and then you make these triangles out of the tip and you make this super pointy airplane to fly around the room? That's what you do with pizza. You crack the crust right in half so that the tip becomes even tippier. I don't know what you would call that first bite of the pizza when that teeny tiny tip goes into your mouth. But that first bite, oh, the world stops for me.
And loving it.
And loving it. The oil, the cheese, the sauce, the dough being from New York, whatever the hell it is. But the best part is, I'm standing up. Usually I'm holding the pizza in my right hand. My left elbow is resting on the shelf. I don't need to look out the window. I don't need to look at the pretty girls or whatever. I don't want to look at anything. I just want to close my eyes and be transported to pizza heaven. And then you take a sip of the ice-cold Coke. Again, it's like pairing in wines. That liquid Coke combined with that bite of pizza, it's heaven on earth. But the key is, I'm standing up. The digestion must be different. The way the flavor gets to my brain, it's different when you're standing up. And I don't want a whole pie, Domino's, pizza, whatever, hut. No, you want one slice. I actually had two. I love ordering two from the get-go. I almost had four of them, but I stopped at two. I had to control myself. I was on a diet. Anyway, go to La Monica's. Wait for the pie to come out of the oven. Don't have them reheat one. But if you do have to reheat one, this is advice I got from my good friend. If your kids need braces, this is who you have to go to. Glenn Bloore, B-L-O-O-R-E, my favorite orthodontist. He taught me that if you have pizza in your fridge and you need to heat it up, don't put it in the toaster oven. You put it in a skillet. You heat it from the bottom up. That's the way you reheat pizza so it tastes great. Thank you, Glenn Bloore. Dr. Glenn Bloore. Can we take a call? All right, lines are lit up. Let's go to John in Riverside. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
If you have, as I've told you, I do have a full rotator cuff injury.
Good.
And I just listened to you, and you said swimming, long-term swimming, will remove inflammation, and it will heal on its own. So I just wanted you to touch on that again. And also, being you're a big-time Laker fan, and I admire your show.
Thank you.
How are you handling, you know, this matter? Because, you know, when Michael said, you know, when Kobe died, a piece of me or a piece of us were gone. You know, it's difficult.
It is difficult.
Then as well.
Both of them, are your parents still alive, John?
No.
So you're 59 years old. I'm 62 years old. My parents are gone. They're both gone. But if you listen to the show, which I thank you because clearly you do, my parents may be 6 feet under, but they're still alive to me. You know why, John? Because I talk about them. And if you listen to the show, you're going to hear me talk about them all the time. Because if I talk about them, they're still alive. And while I'm on this ground, on this earth, and I'm still alive, if I talk about them, then they're still alive. And that's what I fully intend to do. With Kobe, people asked me, you know, he was so close to you. He's so important to the show. He did the promo for the show.
Yes.
Should you stop playing his voice doing the show? No. I'm going to play. Yes. Steve Paulette is going to play that soundbite where he says, Dr. Clapper, for as long as they let me stay here at ESPN and it's been 9 years, I'm going to keep playing that because he's still alive. He has to be still alive in all of us. We have to carry on his vision of working hard, believing in yourself, and not letting anybody stop you.
Amen, amen.
And that's what I'm doing, and that's what we all have to do. And what I love about Kobe is that he was the glue that glued this entire neighborhood of Los Angeles together. People can live in New York and Ohio and Washington. They can live wherever the hell they want to live, all over the world, and say that they love Kobe. That's great. But I'm here to tell you, he was special, special to the people in Los Angeles. And that is something we all can be super proud of because he was our own. And his legacy lives on here. They should rename Staples Center Kobe Center. Just like...
One of the things that I want to ask you also, do you think we can... Maybe NBA logo can be changed with his logo instead of Jerry West's?
I don't know about that. I don't need that to happen, to be honest with you, because Jerry West, I'm not interested in changing it. You want to add to life? That's fine. I'm not interested in changing things at all. It's like with the Houston Astros. You know what? It's inappropriate to give the trophy to the Dodgers because they lost to these cheaters in 2017. But what should be done is you should vacate it. You should get rid of it. It's the same thing. I'm more interested. I'm not changing the past. The past is the past, but it's the present that you work on. Adding to stuff, that's a whole different story. And as far as your rotator cuff goes, listen, if you can still move your arm and you don't have pain, who cares what the MRI says? Leave it the hell alone.
Right, right. It's not, you know, I've been telling them, you know, that, hey, you know, this bothers me from time to time.
Good. Leave it alone. Stay away from doctors. That's my advice from Dr. Clapper. Stay away from doctors. If you don't have pain, leave it the hell alone, John. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
God bless you, and I want you to find a total stranger today, John. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
I will. I will. Right. Hey, is this going to be aired on today? So my wife and my friends
could... They can all listen to you on with Dr. Clapper, Steve Paulette. As soon as the show's over, he puts it on the podcast for ESPN. You'll be able to hear it.
Today, right?
Today, like in a few minutes even.
Okay, I admire you so much. Thank you so much. And go Lakers. And one more thing. We're going to win it for Kobe, right?
We're going to win it for Kobe. LeBron James, let him rest. Let him rest that groin. We need him for the playoffs to crush the Clippers. That's what we need him to do.
love it. You are a true Laker fan.
Exactly. All right, have a good day, John. God bless you. We'll take a break. Coming back, the number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the Weekend Warriors Show on 710 ESPN. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Listen to this song. This is from our favorite group, Steve Paulette and I. Very special to the Weekend Warrior. And I know Vincent Laporcio's listening. And this is his son, Nick Laporcio's band, Ayaterra. This band does reggae better than anyone else. And they have exploded on the scene. Selling out stadiums now. This is called Full Circle. Nathan's got the most incredible voice. Playing the guitar in the background is Nick Laporcio, who writes the songs too. Let's hear a little bit more of Ayaterra. Make it louder. Wow. Let's talk about next week. HBO's doing a special about the USC women's basketball team that had Cheryl Miller starring on the team. But along with Cheryl Miller was Rhonda Windham. And Rhonda Windham's going to be my guest. She's terrific. And we're going to talk about women's basketball, women's sports. We may talk a little bit about knee injuries, which I had the pleasure of taking care of. And we're going to talk about it. It's a fascinating subject. And something Kobe was passionate about was women's basketball. So each week, I'm going to showcase the Mamba. Something that he's left us. His mentality. Ice in his veins was today's topic. Next week, it's going to be the love affair with women's basketball. And nobody was better than Cheryl Miller and her team. And Rhonda was on that team. Reggie Miller always talks about the best basketball player he ever went up against was his sister. Until then, have a great week. Know that each Saturday I'll be here to bring you up in spirit, along with Steve Paulette. What a joy to be here. The Weekend Warriors Show. I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. Until then, I'll see you on the radio.